This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You're on Joy 94.9 and welcome to Transpositions. I'm Kurt and I'm your host for this evening, and I'm joined by Ruben and Nate, two FTM Melbourne boys. And tonight we're going to hear Ruben's story because Ruben's got an interesting story that is a little off the linear of the norm of a trans man. And we're also going to talk a little bit about chest surgery without hormones. So chest surgery without testosterone or anything. It is quite popular to get chest surgery if you're not identifying as trans, and it's also possible to get it without testosterone. And we also want to touch a little bit on STPs, which are stand to pees, and male bathroom etiquette, which is it's a big topic and it's going to be an interesting one, and I'm looking forward to it because Ruben and Nate certainly sound like they've got some interesting things to say. You're on Transpositions on Joy 94.9. And I'm Kurt and I'm your host this evening, and I've got Nate and Ruben in the studio. How are you guys?
Thanks, yourself?
Not too bad. Now, Ruben, we're interested in hearing your story of sort of how you came about and how you identify and sort of how you got to this point, because Ruben's sitting in front of me and Nate, and he's got a big scruffy beard and he's very manly looking, and no worries, man. So yeah, how did you get to where you are?
Long story for a few minutes, but I guess the first memory of feeling like I was male was when I was 3 years old.
Three, you can remember all the way back to 3 years old.
Wow. Yep. That's my first clear memory.
Yep.
Got pretty angry when Mum said that I was a girl and not a boy. And there was a whole lot of situations like that where that occurred. But I don't know, you just, as a kid, I don't speak for myself, but as a kid, I obviously didn't know that there was an option available to me to actually, for the world to see me as male, as I felt on the inside. So, sort of wrap it up as something else. And, obviously you see the shame, well, I saw the shame of my family, my mum and dad, that, I was always mistaken for a boy. So you sort of just learn to adapt, I guess, and just get on with it. So, as I got older, I found myself attracted to women, so I thought it must mean I'm gay. I didn't like using the term lesbian because that, for me, had associations with being female, and it just didn't fit for me. But, and then I got into, partying a lot and, not really thinking about my identity, just, losing myself in that for quite a few years. And then it's taken me, I'm 39, so it's taken me quite a while to get to this point where I, feel more myself than ever before. I guess one thing that's interesting or unusual in terms of my story compared to other trans guys I've spoken to is my journey around surgery. In 2007, I sought Dr. Hassell's help through the gender clinic in New South Wales, and went to Megan Hassell and just wanted to get a breast reduction. I just thought if I had a breast reduction, everything will be okay. I'll feel more comfortable in myself. And I remember I went and saw her, and I remember she said to me, and I was quite shocked by it because I'd seen the psychiatrist before, before Megan, and he said to me, do you want to transition? And I was quite shocked at the fact that they'd even asked me that question. And again, the surgeon said to me she didn't believe that. She thought I'd be happy until they were completely gone, and I just thought she was rude. And but obviously she knew, she knew a little bit better than I did. So I lived like that for 5 years with a breast reduction, and things certainly improved because I was I felt like I was less visibly female, so that made me a bit more comfortable. But I went back to, after 5 years of living like that, I was there was a guy at my work who started transitioning, and I remember feeling envious, you know, that he'd transitioned, and I started watching heaps of transition videos, and I just kept feeling really envious and jealous of people that had gone through with the process. And that's at that point I decided to that I was female, but I wanted to have a double mastectomy. So I went to Andy Ives, or went back to Fintan Hart in Melbourne, a psychiatrist, and then went to Andy, and again they both asked me if I wanted to transition. Again, I said no. And then had the surgery, and obviously at that point I hadn't started testosterone because I didn't want to be male in my denial at that point. But as soon as I had the surgery, it was like I saw myself in the mirror for the first time as male. And it was just really obvious to me from that point. And that, so that was October 2012. Okay. 30th of October 2012.
So quite recently.
Yep.
And so you really liked the feeling of having a flat chest. And that kind of led you to start thinking about testosterone and
Yeah, well, I think like the what sort of surprises me is looking back on my story, like the level of denial that I still had around my identity and the, I guess, the courage that I needed to muster up in order to make the decision that this is something I felt strong enough to go through, and this was, you know, 100% decision that I needed to make. It took quite a while, but I think more so than enjoying the flat chest, actually seeing myself in the mirror and it all falling into place. Like that was my moment of realization. And my partner at the time, no longer my partner because of the transition, yeah, was quite shocked, obviously, when I started speaking about the fact that I was male and was going to proceed with the transition. So it was certainly, you know, a different thing for her to try and get her head around her girlfriend at the time having a double mastectomy, but then obviously her girlfriend being her boyfriend because she identified as lesbian. So yeah,
it is a tough one when you're transitioning with a partner. Nate, did you have a partner when you were going through first early transition?
Yeah, so when I first sort of came out and started to transition, I did sort of have a partner, and I suppose had a similar situation in terms of that, you know. I was, I suppose, lucky that within our relationship, she didn't, that sort of wasn't the main issue, I suppose. And she was sort of quite supportive and sort of happy to have a boyfriend, for, you know, want of a better term. So, yeah, so I suppose it was, but for me it was quite scary, I think. That makes it quite intimidating trying to tell your partner, who you know identifies as a gay person, that, you know, to the outside world, if they stay with you, you're going to look sort of like a straight couple.
Yeah, blend in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. My partner was concerned about that too. Just the whole, my sexuality is now labelled a different word. But I suppose, Ruben, you were saying that you were going through denial about being male inside. And was it your having to tell your partner, was that part of the denial? Did that sort of stop you from saying, actually, this is what I want?
No, I think I'd buried it deep before that, because obviously having known from being three that it was deep down in there. And I think one of the things that actually stopped me from wanting to go forth with a transition was my idea of what it meant to be male. And I'd obviously internalised some of societal beliefs around what it means to be male, you know, big, burly, sort of
masculine,
meathead sort of male. That's
footy,
and I thought, I don't, and I thought, that's not me, so I can't be male because I don't identify with that. And it's actually a fellow in trans guy in Sydney story on FTM Australia website who was talking about the continuum of being masculine, and I really identified with that because I thought, well, I can just be me. Mm-hmm. I don't have to fit any particular stereotype. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, so it certainly wasn't the partner I was with. It was more my idea of what it meant to be masculine, and also if I wasn't going to proceed with lower surgery, I had this internalised transphobia, I guess, around I'm not a real guy.
Yeah. If you'll always be a trans guy, never.
Yeah, yeah. So there was that sort of fear, mm-hmm. Plus internalised phobias that I guess made me hesitant to take that next step.
Yep, absolutely. Mm. We'll come back with more on the denial part of Ruben's story, and also just life as a trans man, continuing on the topic. You're listening to Trans Positions on Joy 94.9. And Ruben was just talking about how he struggled with a little bit of denial on what it means to be male. And I know that I went through a little bit of that, and I started really looking at other men on the tram, and when I was walking past other men, everyone probably thought I was a big, sleazy gay boy. But I'd always really become more aware of how other men presented, and if they were a softer man, and that it was okay to be a softer man, and that I do know people who are not big, beefy, burly, footy beer men, but they are like a soft guy, and that's okay. And that was something that I had to learn as well. Mm-hmm. Nate, I wondered if you sort of went through that with, do I identify with male, or, you know, because yeah. I know some people don't identify as either because they might struggle with that gender binary.
I think that for me it was more that I struggled with it in terms of when I wanted to go get my psychiatrist letters and say that, you know, I was a trans guy and that I did tick off these boxes. And I remember sort of sitting beforehand going, well, but I'm not like, you know, I don't think I'm hypermasculine, and I don't really want to be that kind of, you know, guy. I just want to be kind of, you know, me and all that sort of stuff. And I guess I was lucky that majority of men in my life are sort of, I suppose, softer. I don't know, that kind of that they're okay and comfortable with femininity and all those mm-hmm. sorts of things within their identity as a male. So for me it was more just trying to find that balance, but still trying to prove that I really was a guy, like,
yeah,
you know, like, oh, still getting scared of spiders and things like that.
Yeah.
But you know, like, so it was more around the, I suppose, logistics of it that I was concerned in terms of masculinity.
Mm. Mm. I do remember one thing I said to my psychiatrist was, I'm worried about getting in guy situations. And he just looked at me like I was an idiot and just went, what do you mean by guy situations? And I was like, oh, in fights and things, you know, don't guys beat each other up? And he said, you're not going to, you know, he was sitting there, he was sort of, he's a softer guy as well, if he doesn't mind me saying, I'm not saying his name, but, and he was just sitting there, and I kind of, the look on his face made me realise that I was being stupid thinking that being a bloke means that there's a potential to be beaten up, because it's not all like that. Mm. Yeah.
I think that's the thing though, like, you, yeah, we see pictures of what it means to be male or female, and we internalise those things and don't even realise it. So, I mean, there were sorts of fears for me as well, and would I be taken seriously as a guy?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like, there's different circles I move in with lots of cis guys, and I'm often questioning myself. They probably would have no idea, but there'll be a dialogue going on in my own mind about, am I saying the right thing? Do I? Because often they can look quite disinterested. I sort of stand side by side, not make much eye contact, and there's, yeah, like this whole different ritual of interacting, and yep, and so that's taken a while to sort of get my head around as well. So,
yeah. One of the things that was really stood out for me was, you can't get too excited when you're having a man-to-man conversation. You just got to kind of be monotone and sort of just talk from your chest, and you know, there's so many little different things that you do notice, and especially early on in transition, you just kind of go, whoa, today this happened and it was totally crazy, and just,
yeah, like, I still will never forget, like, a random person at the bus, like, at the tram stop, I was standing there, an old, sort of older guy, middle-aged guy standing next to me, and a woman walked past, and then he looked at me, he's like, hey, all right, and I'm just kind of like, what? That's not nice, like, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
It's like, is that what guys do? Like, this is weird.
Mm. Yeah, it's sort of this unspoken look that guys have, yeah. Mm. I did notice that look when I presented as female. Sometimes I'd see that look happen between guys, and get a little bit pissed off that I wasn't invited, you know, or a bit pissed off that I totally knew what they were, like, giving each other a look about, but they thought I didn't, sort of thing. So, yeah, it's interesting, and it also leads us onto bathroom etiquette as well, which is certainly something that has changed, I guess, for all trans people when they start using the opposite bathroom. It's tough in early transition, when you don't know which bathroom to use. Did you guys ever sort of, were you ever out in public and really need to go to the bathroom and then go, oh, I can't go because there's no disabled toilet? Or
yeah, well, for me, prior to transition, you know, I had all sorts of things. Like when I was in Bangkok once, I had security come in and pull me out of the women's toilets because I thought I was in the wrong toilets because I was quite androgynous then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and certainly going to the women's bathrooms was always an ordeal, especially if we're, you know, you have a day where you're feeling a bit vulnerable and you just want to blend in. But going to the toilet was like this massive drama, like people, when you're walking in, staring, when you're coming out of the stall, staring, people questioning you're allowed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So for many years, I just went to the disabled toilets.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally nicked into the guys' toilets if, you know,
if there's no one
be bothered
there,
waiting, or but as soon as I started transition, I just started using the guys' toilets, and it took a little while for me to adjust in my mind that, because no one was even noticing. Like, I'd walk in, people would take no notice, but there would be this whole, oh my god, they're going to notice, I shouldn't be in here, and you know, or someone's going to notice I'm a little bit different, or you know. But as I've masculinized more, I don't even really think about it anymore. Mm. Yeah, just sort of go in and do what I need to do. But it's certainly a different etiquette.
Mm.
People don't look at each other. There's no eye contact.
Yeah.
Certainly. Head down, get to it and get out.
That's it. Yeah, certainly in the female toilet, it's sort of a little retreat, a social retreat to discuss what's been going on at the dinner table or whatever. But the male toilet is business, strictly business. Don't look at anyone, don't talk to anyone, which can be beneficial in early transition, I guess, because people aren't scrutinising you and, you can get away with just ducking in and out. Before the show started, we were all sitting around talking about urinals and we had Chris is on the panel tonight, everybody, and Chris did pipe in. Because Nate, you've never used a urinal before?
No.
It is possible. For listeners who were thinking, how the hell do trans boys use urinals? There are things called STPs, which are stand-to-pee devices. They come in all sorts of different shapes and sizes and materials. They're sort of an attachment to your pee hole, I guess. It allows you to aim where you need to aim to.
Better than most cis guys, I think. with less practice.
I would agree with that.
From what I can see, anyway.
Yeah, that was one of the things that that shocked me in male bathrooms. I was like, how do they not get it in the toilet? STPs. Now, Nate, you left a little comment on our Facebook page saying that you had trouble with an STP that you bought.
Yeah, so initially I went and looked at all these things and I was like, because there's sort of varying range of prices and there's all different types of stuff. So I thought, oh, look, I'll just do something really basic. And I'd heard that if you had a medicine spoon, if you sort of cut the end off, then that sort of works. And I thought, oh, I'll try that. So it's this sort of tiny little spoon. And I was thinking, oh, you know, that kind of
discreet.
Discreet. So it's good. Fits into your pocket because you kind of don't want to be sort of in a rush. But I suppose if you're ever going to use a device, I would strongly recommend practicing at home in the shower before you practiced wearing clothing and
wearing your good jeans.
Yeah, trying to aim in a tiny little funnel that, you know, it just it got a little bit messy. That's all.
Sounds a bit traumatic. You're listening to Transpositions on Joy 94.9, and we've been having some very interesting discussions during that song, which was American Horror Story Coven soundtrack House of the Rising Sun. I hope you enjoyed it, because Chris on the panel didn't enjoy it. Now, Reuben and Nate, we're talking STPs. So, Nate, you were telling us about your little medicine spoon, which was traumatic. So anyone listening out there, unless you have really good aim or know exactly how your flow is going to come out, then maybe not use a medicine spoon. But
Or practice a lot.
Or practice a lot in the shower, as Nate said. Now, Ruben, do you use STPs?
Recently, relatively new kid on the block when it comes to STPs. One thing that we were talking about on the break was the psychology of peeing, standing up. Probably until about a month ago, I just thought, why would you bother? Yeah. And I don't know if it's a primal urge or another part of my exploration as a trans guy. But, I've certainly been experimenting with that in the last few weeks. And so I started off with a pee style. But I haven't had one accident with it, which is great. But it's quite big. So it's sort of hard to carry around in your pocket without looking like you've got, you know,
A weapon.
Well, that's one way of describing
it. What does it look like? Can you describe what it looks like?
I was about to get it out of my pocket. But no one can see it on the radio. It's almost like the shape of a bird beak. So it's wider at the part where you obviously put it in your junk or your whatever you want to call it. And then it sort of narrows down as where the urine comes out. So it's more of a, well, I haven't really paid that close attention to cis guys urinating, but I imagine the flow's pretty similar. But I have no problems with that. It's just literally carrying it around, which is it's a pain.
Yeah. I suppose it's a pain if you want to be in your board shorts in summer or something like that. Where do you put it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you were saying that you find it you're sort of starting to connect with that appeal of peeing standing up. and Nate, do you feel that way as well? You were saying that you can't be bothered.
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm in my lazy phase, I suppose. Like, I think initially, about 6 months ago, I was like, yeah, I need to stand up. And that's what guys do. They go to the toilet, they stand up.
Yeah.
And then I was just kind of like, well, there's always like a cubicle and a seat. So why not sit down? So I got lazy.
I remember the first time I was going to men's bathrooms, and I actually had to ask someone, can cis men pee sitting down? Because I didn't know if they could, and so I didn't want to be caught sitting down and peeing. Like, you know, you can tell if someone's peeing because you can hear the pee noise, and this is really getting put on, but I didn't want to be caught sitting down peeing and spend someone to go, hang on, dudes can't do that. But they can do that. They can. So why do guys stand up and go through that whole urinal etiquette when they can just have a cubicle to themselves?
I don't know, like I think the psychology of it for me is having like the full, and I know it's we're just talking about urinating, but there's something, I don't know, ritualistic or something to be a guy and to stand up. And because I haven't had that experience, I'm experimenting with that, and sometimes I'll probably be like Nate and go, I can't be bothered, or the pee style is just too big, so, you know, I'm just going to freestyle and sit down today. But yeah, I think it's something about the psychology of standing up, and I don't know. It's hard to explain, because until a few weeks ago, I was like, "Why would you bother?" Like, I don't get it. But yeah, it's just experimenting and working out what's right for you, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Well, before I said even with canines they like to pee on things and mark their territory, and it's a sign of dominance, and it might be something similar with humans.
Possibly
If
I start urinating on trees everywhere, you know there's a problem.
Now look, I would love to hear from you if you want to SMS 0427 JOY 949, or you can call Jerry at the front desk on 1300 JOY 949, or email us on air at joy.org.au. And we've had a message in tonight saying so many deep voices on tonight and a few cute giggles too. Thanks for that. That's Nate's cute giggle, not mine, I promise. Going back to surgery without hormones, Ruben, I forgot to ask you a few questions. Mm-hmm. What was the requirements to have surgery without hormones? Was it same as any FTM guy who wants surgery, or was it a little bit different?
Because I'd already been to Fintan psychiatrist in 2007 before I had the breast reduction, which even sounds bizarre when I talk about it, but when I had the breast reduction, we'd already started the conversation about transition, as I mentioned earlier, and then when I had the double mastectomy again, I went back to Fintan, and for some reason I just thought he was going to go, "You're crazy, you don't know what you want, see you later," but he was like, "Yeah, I was wondering when this was going to happen," sort of thing. So that was really validating. And and when I went to Andy, he was great as well. Like I just said, I want to be female, but with no breasts. So there was no issue for me, as in they didn't say, "Well, you have to start testosterone," because obviously that wasn't on the table. But there were certainly weren't any issues. And I had a young trans guy the other day asking me if the results from surgery are different if you have the surgery before you start the testosterone. And I mean, that question's difficult to answer, I mean, because obviously I don't have the other experience. But I don't see any difference between me and any other trans guy who has started testosterone before the surgery and vice versa, I guess. It's really your personal journey and your personal choice. I can't imagine have ever starting testosterone before having surgery. Like I can't imagine for me having chest still and being on testosterone. That would have just been too hard for me. Mm-hmm. It's just happened how it's meant to. I mean, yeah. So I don't see any disadvantages to having surgery before you start testosterone.
Okay. And when you spoke to Andy Ives, because he was your surgeon for Megan Hassel did the breast reduction, mm-hmm. and then Andy did the actual mastectomy.
Yep.
Yep. So did Andy say that there were any difficulties without testosterone, or was he a bit hesitant or anything?
No, not at all. It was great.
Cool, awesome.
Just went in and said, "This is what I want," and we talked through the risks, like with any surgery, and what the scarring would be like, all that sort of stuff. And so you make an informed choice about what, you know, and realistic perception of how things will turn out.
Yes, yeah.
He was fantastic.
And Nate, you went to Andy Ives.
Yeah. Yep.
And so how long has it been since your surgery?
It's about seven months maybe.
7 months, yeah. Nice. And all is all good?
Yeah, all's great.
Yeah, you're happy with it? And
very, very happy. No complaints. Forgotten what it's like, I suppose, to have to wear a binder and all those sorts of things, which is kind of a weird thing that I never thought I would get to.
Yeah.
Kind of have almost forgotten what it was like to have a different chest.
Awesome. And Ruben, I suppose did you ever use a binder, or did you just kind of go straight from a bra to nothing?
So before the breast reduction, I was quite large. Someone completely different. But then because I was quite small, I think 12A or something, so I just wore like a, not a sports bra, but one of those boob tube sort of tops, so it flattened things out, and then I just went straight from that to double mastectomy.
Yeah.
Yep, no binding.
Yeah, nice.
Yep, I like to go to extremes, you know.
Straight to double mastectomy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, nice. And your chest is going all good?
Yeah.
You happy with it?
I am. There's some pretty big scars there. I'm actually starting getting some tattooing over them tomorrow, getting a whole chest front sort of piece. So for me, I don't want to let scars, and some guys don't mind about scars, I actually love them or like them. Mm-hmm. For me, I don't want that to stop me from, you know, being as free as I can and getting my kid off at the beach and yeah. So
you still have a bit of a problem with your scars?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, yeah, I just don't like them. I'd prefer not to have them. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. Nate, how do you feel about your scars?
I quite like them.
Like, you like them?
I think for me is that I don't particularly care that they're there, but I also kind of think I went through some really big things and I've kind of got, like, it's kind of like, you know, I went through a really big thing and I've got something to sort of show for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I lost something, so I should have something to sort of, for it to be there. And it's kind of fun to I've been asked once when I was at the beach by a kid, what's that? And I was like, oh, I got bitten by a shark.
Yeah.
And that's fun. Like, yeah, the look on his face, he was horrified. You know, I like petrifying small children, clearly. Yeah. Like, good.
Yeah, you could come up with all sorts of stories.
Yeah,
absolutely. I haven't had chest surgery yet, but I think that I would find the scars sentimental. And I don't think I'd have a problem with them, as long as my partner didn't, and she's quite open to a lot of things. Ruben, you're seeing someone at the moment, and does she love your chest?
She does. She does. I've got to say some good things because I think she's listening at the moment. But hi. No, she doesn't see the scars at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, we've spoken about that a few times, and yeah, she just doesn't even notice that they're there. So she just sees me and how comfortable I am in myself. And, you know, I'm certainly a lot more comfortable in a whole range of ways. And that shows through. So, yeah, people see that. They see, you know, who you are, not, you know, a couple of small incisions.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not a problem. Yeah.
And does your partner, I hope she doesn't mind me asking, what does she identify as? Does she have a label on her sexuality, or is she just,
no,
I think it's pansexual, do they call it?
I think she's very, gotta be careful here. No, no, she's very, she doesn't like labels. Mm-hmm. The irony is my previous girlfriend who broke up with me because she was a lesbian is now with her third boyfriend, which I find quite ironic and can chuckle about now. But and who was quite wrapped up in labels, my partner now is just whoever she falls in love with. So, you know, she's been with cis guys, women, now trans guy, and this is all new to her as well. So, you know, she certainly didn't see that in her horoscope of, falling in love with a trans guy. So, but yeah, it's great.
Yeah, that's fantastic. My partner's a bit the same. She just says to me that she's in love with the person I am and not what I am, which, yeah, I'm very lucky to have that. Now, I wondered, Ruben, if you wanted to tell us a little bit about how you're feeling about your sexuality now, if it's changing, how it was before. And same with you, Nate. If you don't mind sharing, we'll come back with a little bit of that. You're on Transpositions on Joy 94.9, and I'm here with Ruben and Nate, and we were just about to start talking about sexuality, because it is quite common with trans people to have change of sexuality. It can happen. And it hasn't really happened for me. I don't think, I don't really know, but a lot of trans guys have a fluid sexuality and or fluidity in their sexuality. Nate, have you felt that your sexual attractions have changed?
I think so. Before I sort of transitioned, I was predominantly female attracted. And then I think it's sort of as I started to, I don't know if it was more environmental. So like as I started to be going out to sort of gay clubs and no longer, ladies were no longer paying me attention and suddenly all these guys were starting to pay me attention. And I was kind of like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like, you know, and so then started to sort of think about like that sort of stuff. So mm-hmm. it's sort of opening, I suppose, that sort of door of possibilities. And I think I've sort of got to a stage where I'm pretty comfortable, completely comfortable sort of within myself. And so I am sort of attracted to everything, like anything, anyone, really.
I hope just people now.
Well, yeah, just people. Just people. And so yeah, so that's sort of completely changed in that I just just anything really goes. It's more about people rather than sort of what's in people's pants and things like that.
Yeah. I find it interesting that you say that it's more about body comfort. And Ruben, I suppose for you, you know, the flat chest is the body comfort thing and it's sort of you feel more free to be yourself and you feel more comfortable with what that other person's touching. Yeah, because I certainly felt that when I was presenting as female, if I was with a man, it made me feel really, really yucky, sort of. Yeah, but I think if I was to be with a man now, and Candace, don't worry, I still love you, it wouldn't have that sort of fear as back then, and I'd be more open to it and I'd be, you know, willing to try it and probably would enjoy it more than back when I was presenting as female.
And I think with that sort of body comfort is that initially I was like, well, I could never be with a straight guy because they're not going to want to be with a guy, but then I couldn't be with a gay guy because they're not necessarily going to see me as a guy. And there was a lot of stuff, that sort of internal dialogue of, and this goes back to that, what is a guy? And so it wasn't until I think I had that switch of, well, I am just a guy. I just, you know, have different things. Yeah. And actually being comfortable with that. And so then I think if you're projecting that, then you sort of get that comfort back as well.
Definitely, yeah. I like to look at it as if we're special guys, special people. Yes. Yeah, because people, when you say you're a trans man and you say that to someone who doesn't really know any trans men, they have this newfound curiosity and they want to know things about you and they look at you with this wondering, you know, I want to know more, tell me more, but they're not allowed to ask. Yeah, they're not allowed to ask because it's rude. You can't ask someone how they have sex, no matter if they're trans or not. But they still want to know. Or people do they? Have you had that happen, Rupert?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. What have you got in your pants?
Really?
Yeah.
Strangers?
Yeah. What's your real name?
Oh, yeah. What's your real name? I got that one before. Yeah. Or why are you changing your name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, that's another probably another show.
Probably a whole other show.
Yeah, I'll leave where I was going.
Yeah. Nate, have you been asked any awkward questions like that?
I think it's not so much the awkward, but I have been asked, like, have you had the op? Have you completely transitioned? And I'm always like, well, which op are you talking about? And what do you mean fully? So I like to mess with people in response rather than actually, you know, in saying, well, what do you mean? And actually get them to say it because often they're too embarrassed to actually ask if you've, you know, had an operation to get a penis. Like that's, they won't say that. They'll just, you know.
Yeah, they won't say, have you got a penis yet?
Exactly.
No one would say that. it would be very awkward if someone did. And I find it, if you're not going to ask a cisgendered person the question, don't ask a trans person the question. And you know, I don't walk up to people and say, hi, I'm Kurt and I'm trans and currently I do not have a penis and I still have a chest.
Let's get all the main questions out the way.
Yeah. Yeah. So now that you know, what my body looks like, then we can get to know each other. but it is interesting what sort of questions you do come across, especially in early transition. I had a few weird questions and it can play with your mind a little bit in those fragile stages of early transition. It sort of goes along with being misgendered and those sort of that really sensitive those sensitive
and
things.
Reactionary and reactive to people, misgendering you or thinking they're misgendering you. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah,
as you become more masculine, I think that stuff for me has been less important because I'm just read as a guy now. So. Yeah. I'm less sensitive to that because the people who have misgendered me look ridiculous, not
exactly.
me.
Exactly.
People are standing there looking at them going, why are you calling him she? Look at him like you're crazy.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. So, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Well, it's been awesome chatting to you guys tonight. We are wrapping up Transpositions. If you would like to go to our Facebook page, you can find the link on the Joy website, joy.org.au, and you can also find the podcasts from previous shows, which Simon has very kindly worked away on and has uploaded them to the Joy website, joy.org.au. So enjoy the podcasts. I've been enjoying them. And this episode should be podcast soon if you want to hear Ruben and Nate talking again about STPs. It was a lot of fun, guys.
Thanks for having me on.
That's all right. Now, Ruben, you told me you were nervous before you came on, and was it worth it?
Oh, can we keep going?
We can keep going. Awesome. Well, it's been great to have you guys here. Thank you so much for coming in. And Chris, thank you for doing an awesome job on the panel. And Jerry, thanks for answering the phones tonight. Next week, I've got Dee joining me, and you have heard Dee before talk about his battles with alcohol dependency, and Dee is going to be talking about another very personal story next week, so make sure you do tune in to Joy 94.9 next Tuesday. I will speak to you then. You're on Joy 94.9.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.